Hello and welcome to a new edition of RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior. We are the international service of the Argentine Radio, transmitting from the city of Buenos Aires via the shortwaves of WRMI, Miami Radio International, and also via internet on rae.com.ar. My name is Fernando Farias, and together with sound technician Maxi Urquiza, we'll be bringing you this show in English for Tuesday, December 10, 2024. We'll have news, sports and music. Today is quite an important day in the history of Argentina. It is the day of human rights. And in Argentina, it is the day in which we commemorate the restoration of democracy in 1983. A democracy that today is turning 41 years of uninterrupted democracy in Argentina, which is something that was long dreamed of in the 20th century, and something that we really value, especially every December 10 when we remember that fortunately it's been more over four decades of uninterrupted democracy in a country that had plenty of interruptions of the democratic order and the rule of law and the constitutional order throughout the 20th century. So celebrating that Argentina is a democracy non-stop, worth something special. And on the occasion of this anniversary, which is also the anniversary of presidential administrations, in fact President Milei today is marking the first year in office, and there's going to be a special address tonight. We'll be reporting on Mr. Milei's speech during the course of today's news bulletin. But later on, we'll be sharing a piece related to the restoration of democracy in 1983. And I found something in English by the former Argentine ambassador to Australia, Pedro Villagra, who gave a conference at the Australian National Center for Latin American Studies in the Australian capital Canberra in the year 2013, when Argentina marked 30 years of uninterrupted democracy. And it's a pretty comprehensive, very serious talk on the human rights situation during the military dictatorship and after the restoration of democracy, which will provide some context as to why December 10 is so important in Argentine history. Because one of the things that people really longed for in those elections of 1983, in which Dr. Raúl Alfonsín became the first democratically elected president after the dictatorship, was the end of human rights violations, the end of violence, the end of political violence. Dr. Villagra speaks about that. We'll also be sharing a piece on the World Cup of Tango as part of our series on Argentine festivals. The World Cup of Tango that is held every August in Buenos Aires and is now a global event. We'll be giving you some more information, obviously listening to some tango music as well. If you want to get in touch with us, send an email to qslrai@gmail.com or a letter to Maipú Street 555, and then of course Buenos Aires, Argentina. Either way, it's okay for sending reception reports if you are at the EXA. Let's get started now with the news. These are the headlines. Javier Milei marks 1 year as Argentina's president and will deliver a televised national address tonight. A Wall Street expert warns of an inevitable devaluation in Argentina if a US-China trade war breaks off. Nearly 200 people massacred in Haiti, accused of bewitching the son of a gang leader. Buenos Aires province may take over Aerolíneas Argentinas, says Governor Axel Kicillof. Argentina to deploy armed boats to patrol a river shared with Bolivia. Sports. Huracán wins, setting up a championship showdown with Vélez and Talleres de Córdoba next weekend. And these are the news. Javier Milei marks 1 year in office and will deliver a televised address to the nation tonight. He took office on December 10, 2023, after defeating Peronist candidate Sergio Massa in a runoff election with 56% of the vote. According to local media, the head of state will provide a review of his first year in office, mainly highlighting his economic policies. He's expected to emphasize reduced inflation, a fiscal surplus, and exchange rate stability. Mr. Milei is also likely to announce additional plans and reforms for 2025. A Wall Street expert has warned of a high likelihood of a peso devaluation in Argentina. Robin Brooks, a former economist for Goldman Sachs and the Institute of International Finances, shared his views on social media. According to him, a US-China trade war would trigger a wave of devaluations across emerging markets. And then he stated, "Unfortunately, no IMF funding can protect Argentina from a devaluation if that happens." Brooks then added that the peso is highly overvalued anyway and needs to fall. His forecast comes amid speculation about higher tariffs on Chinese imports, a measure supported by US President-elect Donald Trump. It's worth noting that the Argentine peso has been the world's strongest performing currency this year, according to a report released last week by consultancy GMA. In Haiti, nearly 180 people have been killed by criminal gangs over accusations of witchcraft. Officials reported the massacre, which took place last weekend in Cité Soleil, one of the poorest neighborhoods in the capital, Port-au-Prince. According to an NGO, the attacks were ordered by a gang leader after his son died from an illness. The leader, identified as Monel Micano Felix, accused the victims, mostly elderly people, of cursing the boy through voodoo practices. Haitian Prime Minister Alix Didier Fils-Aimé vowed justice for the victims, declaring the red line has been crossed. The crime has also been condemned by UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. According to the United Nations, the Cité Soleil massacre brings Haiti's death toll so far this year to 5,000 people killed by criminal gangs or amid violence. Argentina will deploy armed boats to patrol the Bermejo River, which borders Bolivia. The announcement came from Security Minister Patricia Bullrich during an official activity in Aguas Blancas, Salta province. "For the first time, we will exercise authority over the river," Bullrich said, "in this northern border area." She added then, "From now on, it won't be just our Bolivian neighbors deciding the river's course. Argentina's Coast Guard will also have a say in this matter." Aguas Blancas is one of the most critical areas where both provincial and national authorities must be present, Bullrich noted. The move is also aimed at fighting drug trafficking, hitmen activity, and uncontrolled border routes, she explained. The increased state presence is also expected to curb smuggling, fueled by lower prices for some goods in Bolivia, according to local media. Buenos Aires province may take over control of the state-owned airline Aerolíneas Argentinas. Governor Axel Kicillof made the announcement during a press conference in Argentina's largest and most populous province. The provincial leader rejected privatization plans proposed by the Milei administration. "If the national government wants to dismantle or sell the airline to a foreign company or a favorite group, Buenos Aires province will not allow it," he stated. Kicillof called the flag carrier a vital tool for connectivity and a source of income and welfare. He highlighted the airline's positive impact on the province, including a $2.6 billion increase in economic activity and the creation of 81,000 direct and indirect jobs. And now, sports. Huracán defeated Platense 1-0 at home on Monday night, closing to within 2 points of league leaders Vélez and Talleres. This result sets up a thrilling final round next weekend, where Huracán will face Vélez with a chance to clinch the championship. Huracán must, however, win and wait the outcome of Talleres' match against Newell's in Córdoba. And these were the news on RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior.
RAE, Argentina al Mundo. RAE, Argentina, 面向世界.
RAE, Argentina vers le monde.
RAE, Argentina to the world.
RAE, 世界に向けて, Argentina.
RAE, Argentina al Mundo.
RAE, Argentina al Mundo.
RAE, Argentinian in the world.
RAE, Argentina al Mundo.
Coming up, a feature on the anniversary of the restoration of democracy. Actually, it's an excerpt from a conference given by former ambassador to Australia, Pedro Villagra. But more on that later on. Before that, let us enjoy a little bit of music with this track by Oscar Miranda called Corralera, the one from the Corral. Okay, that was Oscar Miranda with this instrumental piece called Corralera. Corralera is, I don't know, is an animal that belongs in a pen, in a corral or something like that. Beautiful, beautiful tune. Okay, and now we're going to be introducing this piece that is available on YouTube. It's a conference that was organized by the Australian National Center for Latin American Studies, an entity based in the Australian capital, Canberra, in which they invited on that occasion the then Argentine ambassador to Australia, Pedro Villagra, who came to talk about the history of human rights violations in Argentina, which is something that we are remembering today because it's the anniversary, the 41st anniversary of the restoration of democracy in Argentina. We're going to be sharing the part in which Ambassador Villagra, who later represented Argentina in Germany, and was also a Sherpa for the country at the G20. He provides a historic overview of the events from 1976 onwards. Let me add a little context for the years and the period leading to that moment, so you get the full picture. The government of General Juan Domingo Perón, the third administration of Juan Domingo Perón, ended in turmoil. Perón died in 1974. He was quite an old man and was succeeded by his vice president and third wife, Isabel Perón. And there was growing guerrilla activity that had started here in Argentina in the late 1960s, bombings and kidnappings and attacks by these armed organizations that were faced by the armed and security forces in a relatively legal way before 76. Many of these guerrillas were imprisoned according to the law in the legal system. But violence after Perón's death escalated to the violence between the rebels, left-leaning rebels, and the armed forces. You have to add the appearance of right-wing paramilitary groups that some say were accepted and even encouraged by Perón himself to counteract the activity of the leftist guerrillas. The feeling of chaos by the time Isabel was overthrown in 1976 was widespread, and the collapse of her administration was something nobody became surprised about. But nobody expected the bloodbath that the military junta would unleash after taking over, with the declared objective, or the declared goal of putting an end to guerrilla activity and violence. They doubled down on the violence, and they implemented this system of systematic disappearance, kidnappings, torture. It's a situation that many countries in Latin America have been through, in a situation that's been ongoing in the world for the past century. You know, the debate between security and freedom, between human rights and order. But the most accepted number, at least by human rights organizations, is that 30,000 people were kidnapped and never found again by the armed forces. And not all of them were armed rebels, but what they call subversives, like intellectual threats. And even if there were guerrilla members, they had to be subjected to the law, no? To be put on trial, which makes those holding power, the military, more responsible because they were in charge of the state. Well, that's a little bit of context about what happened before. And it's a part of this story that the present administration is very keen on bringing to light, no, to put the focus also on the period before leading to the beginning of the dictatorship, and also not forgetting the victims of guerrilla violence. Well, after this introduction, let us share this piece, this interview by Dr. Pedro Villagra, the former Argentine ambassador to Australia, about the human rights violations committed after the military took over in 1976, and what happened after Argentina retrieved democracy exactly 41 years ago on December 10, 1983, which is why we are playing this excerpt from this interview today.
First, I will give an overview of how the history happened and what happened before 1983 and after, because I think some of you are very familiar with this process, but many are not. The military junta that took over government in March of 1976, overthrowing a democratically elected government, carried out a campaign against opponents where systematic, massive, and grave violations of human rights and fundamental freedoms were perpetrated. People were abducted by military or paramilitary forces responding to the military junta, detained in clandestine centers, tortured, and eventually killed without trial or any pretense of legal process. The murder was never acknowledged, and they became the tragic symbol of Argentina in those years, the disappeared, los desaparecidos. They included women, children, elderly people, and the brutality of the repression was unprecedented in our country. The methods were abhorrent, savage, degrading for the victims and for the families. Fear was one of the main traits of Argentina in those years. Many did not dare to speak or to protest against the state of events, and that could put their lives, obviously, at risk. However, in the middle of those dark moments, there were a few sparks of light, of courage, of decency, and the belief in the best values of humankind, which were not deterred by the threats and violence exerted by the military forces and their associates. For instance, a group of women whose sons, daughters, and grandchildren had been kidnapped and snatched from their normal lives and whose fate was at risk upon not getting answers to their request for information about the whereabouts of their loved ones, started marching in Plaza de Mayo, the focal point of political life and government in Buenos Aires, facing the presidential palace. As the prohibition of public gathering was in force, when they first met, a courageous act by itself in those days, that was 1977, they were prompted by the police to move on, to circulate. And thus they started walking around the May Pyramid, the monument that commemorates the start of the process of independence of Argentina in 1810. They started doing that regularly when most other people did not dare to challenge the veil of secrecy and silence that shrouded the violence perpetrated by the junta. The act of courage was not free of mortal danger. Some of these mothers were indeed kidnapped, tortured, and killed, becoming themselves disappeared. As the children, of course, their actions did not stop to just marching, but they organized the search for the loved ones. But that act of publicly challenging the military junta became a potent symbol of resistance, of not conforming to the violent and unjust state of affairs, and they inspired others to follow suit in protesting against it. They were and are the Madres de Plaza de Mayo, and later the Abuelas de Plaza de Mayo, to whom Guillermo Anad will refer in his talk, and thus I will not expand on this at this point. Other groups also there to react to the oppression and fear, the Permanent Assembly for Human Rights, in which some of the politicians, including Raúl Alfonsín, was one of the members, or the Service of Peace and Justice, led by the Nobel Peace Prize winner Adolfo Pérez Esquivel, who got the prize in 1980, deserve to be mentioned. The brutality of the human rights violations committed during the military government, the lack of civil liberties, the collapse of the economy because of mismanagement and acts of corruption, the almost sevenfold increase on the amount of public foreign debt in only 7 years, to the benefit of the very few at the top of the income brackets and to the detriment of the many at the bottom, as well as the defeat at the South Atlantic conflict, in which the rightful cause of the legitimate sovereignty of our country to the Malvinas cherished by all Argentines, was used as a tool by a legitimate government, all combined to generate a wave of resistance against the military government that swept Argentina in 1982, and led to a growing demand for democracy, freedom, transparency, respect for human rights, and the return of the rule of law. The military government had to rehabilitate political parties in that year, and the political process was brought back to lead the free elections which took place 30 years ago, and Dr. Raul Alfonsín was elected president of Argentina. He was inaugurated on December 10th, 1983. And from then on, Argentina has kept a robust democracy with free elections, full respect for human rights and fundamental freedoms, and a very intense and diverse political party system. Some will say too intense, too diverse sometimes. Dr. Alfonsín had among his priorities for the new democratic government to know the truth over the violations of human rights that had been taking place during the military rule, and only 5 days after being sworn in, created the National Commission on the Disappearance of Persons, the CONADEP, integrated by highly respected Argentines in order to gather elements to shed light on those tragic years, identify the victims, make the methods used in the brutal repression known, and bring to justice those responsible for those violations of human rights during the years of the military junta. The Commission's report is compelling reading even today, 30 years on. The Nunca Más, the Never Again, as it was called, did not only reveal the extent of the violations of human rights, but also the systematic and premeditated nature of it. It also compiled a list of the thousands of people who were kidnapped and whose whereabouts were never known, los desaparecidos that I mentioned before. In an unprecedented move, Dr. Alfonsín brought the chief of the military government from 1976 to 1983 to trial. He mandated that they be prosecuted only 3 days after taking office. Those chiefs included the president of Argentina during the military rule. Some were convicted to life imprisonment, others to long jail terms, and a few were acquitted of human rights violations, but were court-martialed for mismanagement of the South Atlantic conflict. In other trials, the leaders of the revolution organizations, Montoneros and the People's Revolutionary Army, were also convicted, some in absentia. Besides the action to prosecute for the violations of human rights and the search for the truth of those, Argentina developed a proactive agenda also by ratifying or adhering to crucial international instruments on human rights, such as the Covenants on Civil and Political Rights and on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights, the Convention Against Torture, the Inter-American Convention of Human Rights, the San Jose Convention, and became actively involved in the international human rights agenda and the bodies dealing with these matters, both at the UN and in the Inter-American system. The trial of the commanders opened also the way for the judiciary to initiate criminal proceedings all over the country against officers of the armed services who had participated in these crimes in their jurisdictions. This led to prosecutions being started to several hundred officers in the armed forces, police, and other groups who were accused of having participated in violations of human rights. However, the military, albeit their prestige and social standing severely weakened, still were a strong force in the 1980s. And lower-ranking officers in their ranks resented being prosecuted for violation of human rights in which they had indeed participated, which were increasing in numbers. These prosecutions were becoming hundreds, as I said, as time went on, and new accusations were presented in the judiciary and new cases opened. Unrest spread. The government of Dr. Alfonsín gave in to these pressures, and the so-called Full Stop Act, which in order to stem the uninterrupted flow of new cases over the next months or years, limited prosecutions to those cases which could be brought to justice before 60 days after the enactment of the law. That made it very difficult for prosecutors to actually build a case, to have everything ready to start. This law was passed by the Argentine Congress in December 1986, which in a way also, being similar to Australia, that implies that this period of time will be running during January, where we have what is called the judicial fair, so the holidays for the judiciary. So, and that, to the surprise of many, particularly from the military, obviously, the judiciary, and especially the prosecutors and the Organization of Human Rights, worked overtime during that time. They canceled the holidays, and they actually follow the prosecution. So at the end, in these 60 days, hundreds of cases were initiated, so they should have been prosecuted. But this led to turmoil, to further turmoil within the officer corps of the armed forces, particularly in the army. a mid-rank and junior officer rose against the civilian government in different points of the country during Easter 1987. These officers alleged that whatever the participation of these low-ranking officers in the violation of human rights, they were acting under orders. And their superiors, from the superiors, obviously, and were therefore not criminally responsible for these acts, but the responsible were the heads. These uprisings were allegedly also not intended to produce a coup d'etat, and indeed the highest-ranking officers were not part of them, but they did nothing to prevent them either. They were directed to put pressure on the government to stop these criminal proceedings being instituted before the deadline established by the full stop law, as they saw that even this law would not stop the criminal proceedings. The government of Dr. Alfonsin once again caved in to these pressures, and the so-called Due Obedience Act was introduced to Congress and passed in July 1987. This law limited the possibility to prosecute criminally, those involved in the violation of human rights only to high-ranking officers who were responsible for issuing the orders which led to those crimes. Exceptions, and this is important for some cases in the future, were made for cases of rape, disappearances, or identity forgery of minors, not of adults, or extensive appropriation of real estate. The acceptance of the due obedience principle represented a throwback to the pre-Nuremberg trials. These laws had the effect of severely, both of them, had the effect of severely limiting the number and the scope of perpetrators of violation of human rights which could be brought to justice, and thus constituted a setback, as they interrupted the judicial review and prosecution of crimes committed during the military dictatorship, thus providing impunity for those involved. But some sectors of the military were not even then satisfied and continued plotting against the democratic government, and the newly elected President Menem, invoking national reconciliation, decided to issue a presidential pardon in December 1989, which included all those officers who could have been included in new prosecutions, as well as those who had rebelled against the prosecutions by the judiciary earlier. But they proved not to be enough, and after a new uprising in 1990, this one, a bloody one, a new presidential pardon issued in December 1990 included these commanders who had been convicted in the trials, because the ones that I mentioned in the trials conducted by President Alfonsin, and this included the commanders of the juntas and their military presidents who were serving jail prison terms. It had the effect also of setting free those high-ranking officers who had been convicted and were not covered by the due obedience and full stop laws. There were massive demonstrations across the country to protest against the pardons, as they consolidated impunity of those responsible for the grave violations of human rights and crimes against humanity committed during the military dictatorship. They were not well received by most of society. In the meantime, since 1986, the organizations of human rights started a campaign against these impunity laws, the full stop and so on, attacking them as detrimental to the democratic commitment to bring to justice those responsible for those crimes and demanding the reopening of the criminal prosecutions. Those setbacks of 1986 to 1990 left a bitter taste in Argentine society, as the social and political opinion was indeed in favor of ensuring that those guilty of these crimes should be brought to justice, convicted, and serve their terms as a way to guarantee that impunity be rejected and that the Argentine democracy should be based in justice, transparency, and truth. However, even if the revision of the past violations went through this process of advances and backsteps, the full respect for human rights was not only guaranteed since 1983, but important advances in the corresponding legislation took place, such as the ratifications and full implementation of international instruments during the Alfonsin presidency that I just mentioned. In the reform of the Constitution in 1984, treaties were given constitutional status, and particularly human rights treaties, which are included by name in the Constitution, thus being above domestic law. And this had the jurisprudence of the Inter-American Court of Human Rights became mandatory for Argentine tribunals. This had a significant positive impact in the repealing of all these laws since 2003, as I will refer later. During this process, the mothers and grandmothers of Plaza de Mayo, to whom Guillermo will refer to, continued the search for the children that were stolen from the mothers as they were kidnapped, tortured, and killed, and brought to justice these cases of appropriation of minors which had been exempted from the impunity laws in 1987. The National Bank of Genetic Data was created, which played a crucial role in allowing families of the disappeared to recover these children and to them to recover their true identity. 109 young persons have done so, and the quest continues to identify. It is estimated there may be about a couple of hundred more that could be identified. They're alive, but they don't know who the parents are. In the mid-1990s, legislation to compensate the victims of this violation was also enacted, and reparations were made to thousands of people affected, be it the victims which survived the crimes or the kin of those who did not. In the context of the Lapaco case before the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, the right to truth was recognized, and that led to a new type of legal proceeding that took place. The military could not be prosecuted and condemned, but these truth trials, as they were called, they could not produce a criminal conviction, but they had the right to identify and to get to know, get the information of whatever happened. So, because the important, we are convinced that the right to truth is one of the main contributions of Argentina to development of international rights and human rights, and there is then I will refer to the rapporteur on truth and other things. In 2001, finally, a tribunal declared the unconstitutionality of the full stop and obedience. So this decision was based in this situation of including in the constitution the human rights treaties, as they were crimes against humanity. They could not be claimed as to have the statute of limitation, and the result is that they went on appeal, but at the end, the Supreme Court of Argentina, they confirmed the inconstitutionality of these laws in 2005. The reversal of the laws that provided impunity for those responsible for violations of human rights and crimes against humanity was one of the priorities of President Néstor Kirchner since he took office at the elections in 2003. This responded, in fact, to the demand of society at large, led by human rights groups, as well as to his own conviction that the moral reconstruction of the Argentine democracy needed could not have solid basis if justice was not done for the crimes committed during the dark times of the military rule. On the initiative of the government, those laws were repealed by Congress in that same year of 2003, as contrary to domestic and international law, as they did not allow for crimes against humanity to be prosecuted. The Argentine Supreme Court, as I said, in turn, in 2005, declared the unconstitutionality of the pardons issued by President Menem in the 90s. As a result, hundreds of judicial processes were opened and others reopened from 2005 onwards, covering the whole spectrum and scope of persons accused of having committed crimes against humanity. More than 1,000 persons have been indicted, 560 cases brought to the stage of oral trial, and in those trials, 430 people have been convicted for different degrees of responsibility for these crimes, and 43 were acquitted. This result marked a milestone in international law for cases of human rights violations, and underlines that those which happened in Argentina will not go unpunished. It was the end of impunity, and it sent a powerful message also beyond Argentine borders. We're rightly proud of having led this struggle against impunity. Just to put in perspective, I say that 430 people were condemned in Argentina, convicted for these violations. In the Nuremberg trials, 92 people were selected to be indicted, and only 22 were condemned. In the Tokyo trials, 25 were convicted. Just to give simply the perspective of what we're talking about. These processes reflected the conviction of the Argentine people and the result of the hard work done by the institutions as well as by the indefatigable human rights movements in its quest for justice and by the commitment and strong political will of the authorities to ensure that the truth and justice be achieved. The combination of these factors allowed for all three branches of the state, the executive, the legislative, and the judiciary, to remove all legal obstacles in order to identify and punish those responsible for massive and systematic violations of human rights. It should be stressed that these steps were taken applying both our ordinary criminal law and international law, and through the normal judicial system. There were no special laws, no special tribunals, no changing of the normal jurisdiction would correspond to each crime and its perpetrators, and each and every instance of due process was fully respected.
RAE, Argentina al mundo. RAE, Argentina 面向世界.
RAE, Argentina vers le monde.
RAE, Argentina to the world.
RAE, 世界に向けてアルゼンチン。
Argentina ao mundo.
La RAE Argentina al mundo.
RAE Argentinian in die Welt.
RAE Argentina al mundo.
Okay, let us enjoy a little bit of music after this talk. Is an excerpt of a conference given by the former Argentine ambassador in Australia, Pedro Villagra Delgado, a conference that he gave in the year 2013 on the occasion of the 30th anniversary of the restoration of democracy in Argentina. He was invited to talk about this issue by the Australian National Center for Latin American Studies in Canberra. You can find this on YouTube. Let us enjoy a little bit of tango, and after that we'll have a feature on the World Cup of Tango that is held in Buenos Aires every year. But before that, and to set the mood, let's share this piece, La Mariposa, The Butterfly, by Osvaldo Fresedo.
RAE, Argentina to the World, presents Argentina Celebrates Tango Festival and World Championship of Buenos Aires.
Para el amor que se baila en los pies de una milonga, en los pies de una milonga.
The Tango Festival and World Championship of Buenos Aires, celebrated since 2009, is a tournament carried out at several premises and stages of the city that resound with the musical expression and tango dances, the intangible cultural heritage of humanity. Tango, born in the wake of the 20th century of the cultural mixture of immigrants and creoles of the suburban neighborhoods and the River Plate working class in the south of Latin America, was declared Intangible Cultural Heritage of Humanity by UNESCO to preserve the cultural expression that personifies and fosters both diversity and dialogue. The hearts of the cities of Buenos Aires and Montevideo, the capital city of Uruguay, the courtship of embraced dancers, the 2x4 rhythm, and a series of rituals proving their belonging in time and space, such as the Buenos Aires Argot Lunfardo, integrated all a revolutionary identity, presentation card inseparable from the urban culture of the River Plate, in the expression of melancholy and sensuality. Considered rude in its beginnings due to a way of dancing that exceeded sexual approaches and too explicit lyrics, the tango was progressively incorporated by the Argentine social and cultural elites as a way of expression overtaken by sophistication in the interpretation, composition, and dancing. The music performance starred by the bandoneon, a bellowed instrument inherited from Eastern Europeans, reproduces an emblematic sound. Many lyrics were written in Buenos Aires City Lunfardo, the argot born in the popular neighborhoods of the mixture of Argentine and European terms. Life in the poor suburbs, the sorrows of the heart, the love for the mother, the hurt and distance, and a persistent and almost intimate melancholy combined to create the leitmotif of a music that had already surpassed its frontiers. The tango recognition was achieved when it was presented in Paris, a place that, at the time, embodied the cultural Mecca worshipped by South America. According to UNESCO, the tango reunites five essential criteria to be considered cultural heritage of humanity. It is different, original, a distinctive mark of the urban communities of the River Plate, increases the cultural assets of Argentina and Uruguay, and in both countries, there is a plan of preservation and recovery of every tango expression. For the international entity, the tango, interpreted and danced at the milongas, the typical tango dancing salons, spread the urban spirit of the River Plate throughout the world, adapting to the new scenarios and the course of time. The Tango Festival and World Cup of Buenos Aires, during 10 days in August, is a large window displaying the best of the genre and the presentation of the new varieties brought by the thousands of young dancers from all over the world who make of tango their leitmotif. During the festival, different free activities are offered, such as recitals, exhibits, lessons and shows, and even a fair of themed products like clothes, books and music. Other interesting places are the milongas of the city and the so-called tango trails through the traditional tango neighbors, such as La Boca, Boedo or Barracas. The Tango World is held at the same time, a tournament whose number of attendance and audience increases every year. In the last years, the attendance average amounted to 55,000 people and 400 tango dancing couples from all over the world during the two-week tournament. The contest is held in two categories, stage tango and salon tango. The latter gathers groups of couples who dance in the same salon without choosing the music. The couples have to move around the dance floor in a counterclock direction. This modality aims at respecting the basic characteristics of the tango dance and establishes strict choreographic rules such as the permanent embrace of the dancers until the end of the composition and the ban of choreographic leaps. Clothes do not obtain special points. In the case of stage tango, a for export modality, couples dance in turn accompanied by a choreographic and dramatic exhibit that links basic choreography, the dance steps marking the aid, the embracement and the measured walks, with dancing touches, stage figures and choreographic variations that respect the sensual spirit of the dance.
Saben los frizucos, lamidos y sus setas, que saben lo que es tango, que saben de compás. Aquí están elegancias, que pintas, que siluetas, que porte, que arrogancia. Que no sepa bailar así, se baila el tango, mientras dibujo el ocho. Para estos filigranas yo soy como un pintor. Ahora una corrida, una vuelta sentada.
Argentine Germán Vallejo and Magdalena Gutiérrez were the winners of the Salon Tango in the 2017 edition of the Tango Championship. Dancing couples from Argentina, Russia, Indonesia, South Korea, Italy, China, Japan, Colombia, and many other countries took part in the selection. Axel Arakaki and Agostina Tarquini from the province of Santiago del Estero in the central northern side of Argentina were the winners of the category Stage Tango. Free dancing lessons, composition writing, instruments, and guided tours in Spanish, Italian, or English to get to know the tango areas par excellence are also offered during the festival. There's also another circuit, amid tangos and milongas, that can be walked through and reflects the indelible presence of tango figures such as Gardel, Piazzolla, Horacio Ferrer, Tita Merello, and many others. On foot or by metro, the circuits are opened the second Sundays of the month at 4 p.m. in the historic hub of Buenos Aires. In August, the city of Buenos Aires dresses itself in tango clothes, in every street and music center. From the classic to the vanguard, everything goes at the time of celebrating this gloomy feeling that can be danced by representatives of all ages and social classes.
Buenos Aires, querido, cuando yo te vuelvo a ver, no habrá más pena ni olvido. El farolito de la calle en que nací, el sertinero de mis promesas de amor, bajo su quieta lucecita yo la vi, a mi pebeta luminosa como un sol. Hoy que la suerte quiere que te vuelva a ver, ciudad porteña de mi único querer, oigo la queja de un bandoneón, dentro de mi pecho pide rienda al corazón. Mi Buenos Aires, tierra florida, darme mi vida, terminaré. Bajo tu amparo no hay desengaño, vuelan los años, se olvida el dolor. En caravana los recuerdos pasan, con una estela dulce de emoción. Quiero que sepas que al evocarte se van las penas del corazón.
RAE, Argentina to the World, presented. Argentina celebrates. Tango Festival and World Championship of Buenos Aires. Production and research, Silvana Avellaneda. Technical Operation Edition, Matías Receigor. The Voice, Miriam Túrcula.
RAE, Argentina al Mundo. RAE, Argentina, 面向世界.
RAE, Argentina vers le monde.
RAE, Argentina to the world.
RAE, 世界に向けて, Argentina.
RAE, Argentina al Mundo.
RAE, Argentina al Mundo.
RAE, Argentinian in the world.
RAE, Argentina al Mundo.
And let's sign off, but before that, let's go over the headlines again. Javier Milei marks 1 year as Argentina's president and will deliver a televised national address. A Wall Street expert warns of an inevitable devaluation in Argentina if a US-China trade war erupts. Nearly 200 people massacred in Haiti, accused of bewitching the son of a gang leader. Buenos Aires province may take over Aerolíneas Argentinas, says Governor Axel Kicillof. Argentina to deploy armed boats to patrol a river shared with Bolivia. Sports, Huracán Wind setting up a championship showdown with Vélez and Talleres de Córdoba. This way we come to the end of today's edition of RAE, Radio Difusión Argentina al Exterior in English. Our sound technician was Maxi Urquiza and the host, yours truly, Fernando Farias. Thank you for listening. Hasta mañana.